All right. Thanks, everyone, and good evening, guten Abend. And I'm so excited to speak here at CCC for the first time. I've heard so many great things about this conference, and so I'm really excited to finally experience how it is in person. Today, I'll take you inside a fascinating research journey into both attacking and securing BitLocker. I'll show you how we at Microsoft found and exploited new vulnerabilities, and and I'll show you how we found new vulnerabilities in the Windows recovery environment that allowed bypassing BitLocker and extracting all the protected data in several different ways. My name is Alon, as mentioned. I'm a security researcher working with the Microsoft Storm team. My expertise is in vulnerability research focused on everything that happens before the operating system fully loads, so covering the various boot stages and their security features. This research was done with a colleague of mine, Netanel Ben-Simon, and although he couldn't join us today, this work very much reflects a joint effort. So what's on the agenda today? We'll start with a research background and give an overview of both BitLocker and Winery. Then we'll dive into the vulnerabilities that we discovered and how we exploited them. And finally, we'll wrap up with the research results and takeaways. So to start, let's dig into the research background and set the context. Today, we'll explore a security feature that is designed to protect your sensitive data at rest. It aims to defend against theft scenarios where an attacker, a thief, steals your laptop, aiming to extract sensitive information, compromise your machine, and even backdoor it. You're here at CCC, surrounded by some of the brightest minds in cybersecurity, and let's be honest, some of the juiciest targets for hackers. Now picture this. You step away for a quick coffee break, and when you come back, your laptop has gone. Stolen by a thief that is after your research, credentials, internal data, and basically everything that's sensitive on your machine. Without data at rest protection, the thief can directly access contents on the hard disk, extract sensitive data, and even modify system files to install a backdoor, and then return the machine without any detection. Data trust protection features ensure that even if your laptop is stolen, your data remains encrypted and inaccessible, and your system remains untampered. Now, I know what you might be thinking. The odds of your device getting stolen are so low that you probably wonder if you should even bother worrying. So consider this. Studies show that a laptop is stolen every 53 seconds worldwide. The odds of a device getting stolen are 1 in 10, and the average cost of a stolen laptop is around $49,000. This figure reflects replacement cost, productivity loss, legal expenses, but most importantly, the loss of sensitive data and intellectual property. These numbers emphasize the criticality of data at rest protection features, and with that, let's talk about Windows' data at rest protection feature, which is BitLocker. BitLocker is a full-volume encryption technology that is designed to protect individual disk volumes. Users have the flexibility to choose which volumes to encrypt based on their specific needs, and by default, BitLocker targets the OS volume, ensuring that all the data that you store within the OS environment is protected. With BitLocker encryption in place, even if your laptop is stolen, the protected data remains unreadable to the thief because it's encrypted. Now, the BitLocker threat model assumes an attacker similar to a common thief, a stealer, someone with full physical access to the device, but without advanced credentials like usernames or passwords. If an attacker already has valid credentials to the system, that scenario falls outside the protection scope. Now, as we examined the different attack surfaces, one stood out. An attack surface with significant vulnerability potential that surprisingly has received very little attention in peer research. This attack surface is the Windows recovery environment, also known as Winery. As it turned out, any BitLocker attacker without possessing any valid credentials can directly boot into Winery by holding the Shift key while selecting Restart from the logon UI. Given Winery's fit within the BitLocker threat model, the lack of peer research and its high vulnerability potential, we decided to conduct a deep dive security review that is dedicated towards finding new vulnerabilities, exploiting them, and then fixing them, and then also hardening Winery while reducing its exposed attack surfaces. Of course, the end goal of our security review was to make both Winery and BitLocker more secure and resilient. So let's take a closer look at Winery, what it is, or its functions, and which areas within Winery present the most promising opportunities for vulnerabilities. So Winery is Windows's recovery platform. It's designed to address critical system issues, such as startup failures, persistent crashes, BitLocker errors, and more. For instance, if your machine crashes, Winery is the component responsible for analyzing the issue, identifying corruption, and then resolving them using its recovery tools. Now, if you use Windows, the chances are that you have encountered Winery at least a few times in your lifetime. Architecturally, Winery operates with its own standalone OS known as the Recovery OS. The Recovery OS is basically a lean version of Windows with recovery-specific customizations. These recovery customizations include a unique set of recovery tools that are all integrated into the known blue-screened recovery UI. And among the exposed tools are familiar options like startup repair, system reset, system restore, and others. In terms of storage, the entire recovery OS, including all of the executables, the DLLs, the system files, everything, is compressed into a single WIM file. And this WIM file is named winery.wim, which is stored on disk. We'll talk exactly where soon. This WIM file is then booted using a RAM disk. Now, at a high level, a RAM disk boot involves extracting a static OS image, in our case, it's winery.wim, and using it to create a disk that resides entirely in memory. Unlike traditional boot scenarios, where the operating system runs from a physical storage, the OS disk here, when we talk about RAM disk, lives entirely in RAM, and all the disk I/O operations are basically routed through the RAM disk instead of being routed to the physical media. So when Winery boots, the entire WIM file is decompressed into RAM, creating a temporary RAM disk that presents the recovery OS runtime. An important aspect of RAM disk boot is that any changes made within the RAM disk during runtime are not saved back to the original winery.wim file, which makes the recovery OS inherently volatile. Modifications to the RAM disk are discarded upon reboot. So when BitLocker was first introduced, Winery had to evolve to support recovery from BitLocker-related failures. This led to several architectural and design-level changes to enable that recovery functionality. And we wondered what impact these changes had. So let's take a closer look at those design changes. The first design change focused on the location of the winery.wim file itself. The winery.wim file was moved from residing in the OS volume, which with BitLocker is now encrypted by BitLocker, to a dedicated recovery volume. This change was necessary because Winery must be able to recover from BitLocker-related failures. So for example, if the OS volume is encrypted and becomes inaccessible due to a decryption failure, storing Winery in that location would prevent recovery because we wouldn't be able to decrypt it and then load Winery. And so placing Winery on a separate recovery volume ensures that it can function independently of the OS volume, which is a critical aspect of recovery. The second design change focused on the integrity of the winery.wim file. To support integrity validation of winery.wim, a feature called Trusted WIM Boot was introduced. Trusted WIM Boot verifies the winery.wim integrity basically by comparing its hash to a known trusted hash, so a simple hash comparison. If the hashes match, the OS volume is unlocked, and if the hashes do not match, the OS volume remains locked. These two states, unlocked and locked, define the level of access that Winery has to the OS volume. So in the unlocked state, Winery has full access to the OS, whereas in the locked state, it has no access at all. In other words, basically unlocked means that BitLocker keys are available in Winery, while locked means that they're not available, so we can make use of them. Now, you might wonder why this change was necessary. This change was necessary because Winery now resides on an unprotected recovery volume and can no longer be blindly trusted. With Trusted WIM Boot, any unauthorized modification to winery.wim would break its trust, effectively blocking any tampering. Now, it's really important to keep in mind for the rest of the presentation that due to this feature, modifying the WIM file, basically any contents that are contained within this WIM file, are out of scope and does not provide any value from an attack perspective. It would simply break the trust. The third design change focused on limiting recovery tools that are inherently risky to BitLocker. For example, among the exposed recovery tools in Winery is the command prompt. To prevent a scenario where an attacker abuses the command prompt to access BitLocker protected data, a volume relock functionality was added to Winery. So we talk about a scenario where an attacker doesn't corrupt Winery Vim, simply boots the Winery and tries to abuse existing and harmful functionality within it. And so we wanted to make sure that this doesn't happen, and that's why the volume relock feature was added. And it's basically triggered every time that a risk recovery tool is selected, and it basically relocks the volume, basically removes all of the BitLocker keys. Then to regain access, because we still want users to have the ability to use the command prompt while having access, if the user really wants to use the command prompt, it would simply need to manually insert the BitLocker recovery key. Otherwise, all the contents remain completely inaccessible. And this is basically how it looks like in practice. If an attacker launches the command prompt recovery tool without inserting the BitLocker recovery key, the OS volume is immediately unlocked, immediately relocked, and any access to the secret is blocked. So that's what you see on the screen here. So this means that using any recovery tool that triggers the volume relock do not provide meaningful value from an attacker perspective either, and are also considered excluded from our scope. So to summarize the impact of these design changes, as long as Winery Vim is trusted and no risky recovery tools are triggered, the OS volume is unlocked, allowing Winery to recover it automatically without any user intervention. In contrast, if Winery Vim is modified or if a risky recovery tool is triggered, the OS volume is relocked, preventing any access from Winery to that volume. So now the interesting question arises, any attack surfaces that were exposed because of these design adjustments? As it turned out, during the unlocked state, during the time where Winery has access to the secrets and to the OS volume, Winery parses files from unprotected volumes. Specifically, it parses some files from the EFI volume and from the recovery volume, and these files can directly be modified by an attacker. We decided to dig deeper into these files and their usage, and specifically the files that we will be focusing on today are two files residing in the recovery volume, the RAGEN.xml and BootSDI files, and one file residing in the EFI volume, that is the boot configuration data store. So without further ado, let's dive into the research process of these external controlled files. We'll begin with looking at the BootSDI file residing in the recovery volume. The SDI extension stands for System Deployment Image, and SDI files are optionally used and in RAM disk boot scenarios like Winery boot. When specified in the boot configurations, when the SDI is specified in the boot configuration, the SDI file gets prepended to the in-memory OS image within the allocated RAM disk buffer. So on the screen, you can see a demonstration of how this looks like. We have first the SDI file on the top, and then we have the WIM file presenting the in-memory OS image. So as you can see, the SDI file is prepended to the static OS image. Now, in terms of the actual file format, the SDI file primarily consists of binary blobs organized through a blob table. The blob table holds the metadata for each blob, including type, size, relative offset within the file. And while we won't delve into the full SDI format, we'll actually focus on two specific blobs that are used when we boot Winery Vim using an SDI file. So the first blob is a Vim blob, essentially a blob describing a Vim image. Then the second blob is a blob describing an NTFS volume, the NTFS blob. So on the screen, you can see a demonstration of how this looks like, of the SDI blob. So we have first the Vim blob. As you can see, it points to Winery Vim. And the second is an NTFS blob pointing to an empty NTFS volume. And you can see that the Vim is outside the SDI, while the NTFS is within the SDI file. Now, with better understanding of the SDI file format and the overall RAM disk boot procedure, let's take a closer look at the pseudocode responsible for the RAM disk bootloading. Now, before anyone files a CVE in their head, this is a simplified pseudocode. There is no real integer overflow in the allocate memory call. The interesting vulnerability is actually elsewhere in the code. So let's take a look at it. This code first allocates a buffer large enough for both SDI and WIM files. So we calculate the sizes of both of these files and then allocate a buffer that is large enough to contain both of them. Then it loads the SDI into the allocated buffer. Then it loads the WIM file into the allocated buffer following the SDI. And notice that here the loading API also calculates the hash of the loaded WIM. So this hash, the one that is actually calculated during the loading procedure, is later used as part of the trusted WIM boot integrity verification, one of the design changes that we've just covered. Lastly, the address of the WIM file to boot from, what we actually boot, is computed by adding the SDI specified WIM blob offset to the base of the RAM disk buffer. Notably, and this is the interesting part, there is no correlation between the WIM image whose hash was just verified and the WIM that is actually being booted via the SDI offset. And this missing correlation actually allows us to set the WIM offset arbitrarily, enabling us to boot from any WIM image that was actually never verified. So how do we exploit this lack of correlation? It's pretty simple. We can sneak an untrusted WIM into the SDI file and then set the offset to point right at it. So as you can see, at the end of the boot SDI file, we actually can append an untrusted WIM without actually touching the trusted one. As a result of this setup, the WIM verification succeeds because the trusted on-disk WIM remains unchanged, while the system actually boots from the untrusted one. This vulnerability allows bypassing the trusted WIM boot verification, so we can basically boot untrusted WIM as trusted and have our untrusted WIM benefit from the unlock functionality, thereby bypassing BitLocker and allowing full secret extraction. Now, there are several ways to demonstrate secret extraction using this vulnerability because we actually control the entire WIM. It's the full OS image. In our case, we basically leveraged a file named winpshell.ini. It's a configuration file inside WinRWIM. Usually, of course, no access to this file. But with this vulnerability, we can change the path of the main WinRAR executable to the command prompt. And using this, by modifying this path to the command prompt, we actually got access to the command prompt from WinRAR in auto-unlock state, and then we're able to extract secrets from it. So now let's see the demo for the first vulnerability. So as you can see, we have a locked machine. We're going to simulate a BitLocker attacker here, so we don't have the password. We select Shift and then restart. So now we're going to boot into WinRAR. So you can see that now we're inside WinRAR. We select Troubleshoot Advanced Options and then Command Prompt. At this stage, you will see that the recovery key is requested. What happened here is that basically we relocked the OS volume. A BitLocker attacker, of course, doesn't have the BitLocker key, so we can only skip inserting the key. So as you can see now, if he tries to access the C drive, you'll see that we have no access to the secrets because the volume was basically relocked. So we then change drive to the D drive. That's a mounted recovery volume where we placed our exploit. We're going to execute the exploit. This essentially basically adds an untrusted WIM to the SDI, adjusts the offset. And now the last step that we need to do is basically to reboot into WinRAR to make sure that our exploit is triggered. So we reboot into WinRAR, and now instead of seeing the main recovery executable being run, the recovery UI, you'll see the command prompt, as you can see. We can change drive to the C drive, and now when we check the status, you'll see that the protection is on, but the drive is unlocked. So we can directly access all of the files in the C drive and extract the secrets, as you can see. Thank you. Thank you. Now, we want to see this demo one more time. So let's now move on to cover the research process of the RAgent XML file, which is another file that resides in the recovery volume. So first, what exactly is this XML file? The RAgent XML file represents the recovery state and configuration of WinRAR. In the early stages of WinRAR runtime, WinRAR parses this XML file and operates on it. On the screen, you can see an example of how this XML file usually looks like. Now, we won't cover every field in this XML because not all of them are interesting. We're only going to cover one interesting field that caught our attention. This field is the scheduled operation field. Basically, scheduled operation field instructs WinRAR to run a recovery operation by ID. Simply, scheduled operations offer an alternative method to execute recovery tools in WinRAR. as opposed to the known execution method, which is basically a user booting to Winery and then selecting a recovery operation that it wants from the UI. These schedule operations, if specified, execute automatically before the UI is even displayed. Now, although the same security protections apply to both UI-based and schedule operations tools, we wanted to understand whether any operations are supported exclusively through this field and not exposed through the UI. There are about 12 schedule operations in total, and we analyzed every one of them during our research. Given the limited time today, we're only going to focus on just two, so the offline scanning schedule operation and the Winery apps operation. Starting with offline scanning. So the offline scanning operation basically allows running an antivirus scan from within Winery against the OS volume. This functionality is beneficial against malware that does not persist in Winery runtime. So we talk about a recovery OS that scans an offline volume. And whenever malware does not persist in the recovery OS, that's actually useful because the malware that is on the OS volume would not be able to conceal itself as well. Now, to avoid misuse of this feature, which runs in the unlocked state, right, it has to have access to the OS volume, multiple limitations that narrow down the options were implemented. So the limitations are three as follows. We have first limitation is that offline scanning apps are executed from the offline OS volume. And whenever something is executed from the offline OS volume, it basically means that an attacker, BitLocker attacker, doesn't have any access. It can't enumerate which apps exist there. And so this already limits to only files that are either coming pre-installed in the OS, or there's high likelihood of them being present in that OS. I'm talking about from an attacker perspective. The second limitation is that offline scanning apps must be digitally signed by Microsoft or WHQL, which narrows down the options even more. And then the digital signature must be embedded in the app, not catalog signed. So for those of you that know what's catalog signing, basically files that are signed in the catalog can't be used for offline scanning. Signature must be embedded. So we enumerated the applicable apps, and we discovered approximately 30 applications. No, the command prompt is not among them. And additionally, most of those were not even applicable to run inside Winery, mainly due to compatibility reasons. We reviewed a lot of applications and applicable applications one by one to see if one could potentially be misused. And that's when we found the TTTracer app, which fits within the limitations. TTTracer is actually a time travel debugger utility that supports tracing arbitrary apps, basically. So Winery does not enforce strict validation of the offline scanning app arguments, which is reasonable given that each app may use a different argument format, of course. And additionally, it doesn't account for the fact that some apps might execute other apps. As a result, it's possible to trace CMD under TTTracer.exe without going through the traditional validations. So let's go over the exploit flow of that second vulnerability. So first, we configure the offline scanning operation in RAgent XML, and then we reboot into Winery. Winery then parses this XML in its early stages and operates in it. According to the schedule operation we just set, offline scanning, Winery starts the offline scanning procedure. It will fetch the offline scanning app path and parameters from the XML, from the schedule operation parameter, verify the app integrity, as we just mentioned, has to be signed in the OS volume and so on. And then after validation is passed, it will basically execute the tracer with our control parameters. In our case, we set the traced app to be cmd.exe. As a result, TTTracer traces cmd.exe. And at this point, we should have access to the launch CMD while having the OS volume unlocked. So let's see another demo of the second vulnerability of the day. Now, for this demo and all subsequent demos, we are going to fast forward the beginning to avoid duplicating content from the initial demo. So we have here a locked machine. We restart into Winery and then go to the command prompt. We skip the driver. We don't have the BitLocker key. So now when we try to access the C drive, you can see that we don't have any access. That's because we didn't insert the BitLocker recovery key. As you can see, the lock status is locked. So now we change drive to the D drive, mount the recovery volume, and Same as the previous demo, we're actually going to execute an exploit file that we've placed there beforehand. Once the exploit is completed, we're going to restart in the WinRE in order to trigger it. So now we're restarting into WinRE, and what you'll see on the screen is instead of the recovery UI being run, you will see the scheduled operation offline scanning being run. This is the tracer. As you can see, it executes, it asks to accept EULA. We accept. And now we have cmd.access being traced under the tracer. You can see that we have full access to the OS volume and access to all of the secrets.
Thank you. Thank you.
So moving on to exploring WinRE app's schedule operations. The WinRE app schedule operations simply allow running apps within WinRE. Specified apps are verified before benefiting from the unlocked state, and only those apps that pass the validations can leverage the unlocked state. So now you may ask yourself how the verification is implemented. So the verification relies on a simple comparison between the executed app name and hash against a predefined allow list. An application is considered trusted only if its hash matches exactly an entry in the allow list. Otherwise, it's treated as untrusted, and so it will execute, but just without any access to the secrets. The allow list is stored inside WinRE, inside a WinRE registry, more correctly, and so it resides inside WinRE WIM. As mentioned before, any modification to WinRE WIM is out of scope and is not valuable from an attack perspective. An attacker can't add any custom entries to the allow list. So overall, that sounds like the WinRE trusted apps validation is solid and works properly. Similarly to the offline scanning operation research, we find that verifications are implemented correctly and we can't directly execute our own apps. That said, the same question arises: any existing trusted apps that could be misused? Because any app that we can execute in unlocked state essentially adds an attack surface that we can explore. So we enumerated the apps in the allow list and found one registered trusted app. That's an app named setup-platform.exe. This app is registered as trusted during the Windows upgrade procedure. Only once the upgrade is completed, we were surprised to find that the entry remains in the allow list and is not removed. So any machine that was basically upgraded has this entry. And this adds setup platform as a potential attack surface. Now, the fact that setup platform isn't removed from the allow list post-upgrade is already an issue, since basically it's only needed during upgrade. So it should have been removed. But without it exposing other issues that could impact BitLocker, it's only a defense in depth issue. So to assess the severity of this issue, the fact that setup platform remains in the list, we delve deeper into what setup platform does and how it works, and wondered what functionality it exposes. And so we found that the app has an execution path that registers the shift-F10 hotkey as cmd.exe launcher. When triggered, this hotkey launches CMD without relocking the volume. And in traditional legitimate scenarios, this mechanism is used to facilitate troubleshooting during upgrade failures. So the first thing that we try to do, basically, I believe that that's the same thing that you guys are thinking about, basically executing setup platform, pressing shift F10 really quickly, try to see if we can interact with CMD. But we actually failed to do so. As it turned out, even though the desired execution path is triggered, it exits really quickly because it has it looks for a certain configuration on the OS volume. It's not accessible for an attacker, and so it just quickly exits, and we cannot interact with CMD. Additionally, the time window, as I just mentioned, between the hotkey registration and the termination is again too short, making it impossible to reliably trigger. So we decided to dig deeper into the functionality of setup platform to see if other execution paths may help us to widen the window for us to trigger shift F10. And that's when we discovered a very interesting flow. It turned out that after the hotkey registration and before looking for the configuration of the OS volume, setup platform actually looks for an INI file, and based on contents within this INI, it spawns a message box. Again, this decision on whether to spawn the message box or not is based on the configuration of that INI, which is under our full control. The INI is looked for in the recovery volume. So by configuring this INI file correctly, we can create an infinite time window because, you know, if we won't close the window, the application won't resume to looking for the configuration file on the OS volume. So that actually creates an infinite time window for us to interact with CMD. So now let's take a look at the exploitation flow for the third vulnerability. We first configure WinRE apps operation in RAgent XML, then reboot into WinRE. WinRE then parses the XML in its early stages. Then according to the schedule operation we just set, which is WinRE apps, WinRE would start the operation execution. It will basically fetch the app path and parameters from the XML. In our attack scenario, we configure setup platform. Then WinRE will verify that the app exists in the allow list, which it would, and it would then execute the app. As setup platform executes, it registers this Shift+F10 hotkey as cmd.exe launcher and continues execution. Then setup platform exe looks for the INI file in the recovery volume. If this INI file exists, it reads it, fetches configuration from it. And then the configuration we set forces setup platform to spawn a message box. As a result, execution is blocked until message box shuts down. And again, this allows us to press Shift+F10, interact with CMD, while the OS volume is still unlocked. So now we're going to see another demo of the third vulnerability. So again, we fast forward, we shift and restart into WinRE. At this stage, you'll see that we have the volume locked, basically, because we didn't insert a key. So now we are going to change drive to the D drive. That's where we placed our exploit. We're going to execute this exploit. Essentially, what it did is same as we described in this flow. It schedules setup platform, registers the INI, and now all we need to do is to reboot into WinRE. So now you'll see, instead of the recovery UI, what you'll see is setup platform being executed, and you'll see this very cute message box popping, which grants us enough time to press Shift+F10, get the CMD, and now if you check what is the current status of BitLocker, you'll see that protection is on, but the drive is unlocked. And so, once again, if we try to access secrets in the C drive, we'll see that we have full access to this drive. Thank you. Thank you. And guys, we have one more demo, so stay tuned. With that, let's move on to explore the usage of the BCD store residing in the EFI volume. So for those of you who are not familiar with BCD and what it stands for, BCD stands for boot configuration data, and it's the file that defines how Windows boots. It stores boot entries, controls the boot parameters, recovery settings, and many, many more boot-related configurations. Now, you might wonder why WinRE, which is running in the OS phase after the boot has completed, needs access to the boot configuration. This has to do with the fact that there could be many volumes on the physical storage, so WinRE must know which exact volume is the one that it should aim the recovery operations to. To do that, WinRE queries the BCD. The BCD can point to the target volume, basically to any volume, though by default it points to the OS volume, which is the mapped C drive to the OS volume. So far, so good. The usage seems legit. And so when looking at this usage, we asked ourselves, what can we even gain from targeting and attacking this type of usage? As it turns out, WinRE places full trust in the target OS volume that it recovers, assuming that the target OS that it recovers is out of attacker's reach. At first, it might sound to you like a design flaw. Like, why should we trust that target OS? But in fact, when you think about it, when BitLocker is enabled on the target volume, a physical attacker can't modify, read, or do anything on that OS volume. And so WinRE doesn't truly need to validate what's coming from that volume if we speak about, you know, the BitLocker threat model and how it works. And given these reasons, trusting what's coming from the target volume is actually solid from a design perspective. Having said that, this trust assumption, if broken, would open a lot of vulnerabilities for abuse. Because when an attacker can control what is usually considered out of his reach, he can make magic happen. So we decided to try and abuse this trust assumption in order to try and make magic happen. So that's when a creative idea came into our minds, an idea that was actually never explored before. We thought, what if we could trick Winery into thinking that an attacker control volume is the trusted one? We wanted to see if we can gain some sort of impersonation primitive, and this primitive, if we gain it, would actually break the trust assumption, which is what we want. So we already know that the target OS location is controlled in the BCD, which we can directly modify. It resides in the EFI volume. So you might ask yourself, well, it's easy. Why don't you just change the location directly in the BCD file? So theoretically, it's possible, but in reality, it isn't really valuable from an attack perspective. You see, the target OS location isn't used only by WinRE, but also by the boot manager, which uses this exact piece of information to know which volume it should unlock for WinRE to operate in it. So any change we make to that shared store would affect both the boot phase and OS phase. So directly changing the shared store would simply block us from accessing any secrets. This data is basically shared between boot and WinRE. So the primitive that we are looking for must not interfere with the boot procedure and the auto-unlock functionality, and so we must go deeper. We decided to dig deeper into the way that WinRE searches for the BCD store. To locate that store, WinRE iterates over disk volumes and searches each volume for that store. The first store that it finds is the one used to further calculate the target OS location. This logic is already a window for issues, because in most cases, only the EFI volume contains a valid BCD store. So any attempt to use a BCD store from other volumes could potentially be abused. Internally, the functions that are used to iterate over the volumes are two standard Windows APIs. This is the find first volume and find next volume APIs. Notably, the remarks section highlights a very interesting point. And I'm going to read it word by word. One should not assume any correlation between the order of the volumes that are returned by these functions and the order of the volumes that are on the computer. What this essentially means is that anyone using these APIs should really be careful if the data being queried is meaningful. So let's now compare the expected volume ordering that one might think we'll get by using these APIs and what actually is returned. So first, one might expect the returned order to match the physical volume layout on disk. Usually, that would be first EFI, then OS, and then recovery volume. And if that was the issue, if that was the case, there would have been no issue, since the EFI volume would be encountered first and contains the correct store. It's also used to boot the machine, so we can't modify it while gaining any value. Second, one might expect that the returned order will match the output from the disk part command line tool. This port typically returns the volumes, first the OS volume, then EFI, and then the recovery volume. This ordering would also be safe, actually, because the OS volume is not accessible. That would be the first one to be iterated over. And the EFI volume still appearing before recovery, which, again, provide the correct store. But the order of the volumes that is actually returned by these APIs is first the OS, then the recovery, and then the EFI volume. Do you see the problem? So by placing a custom attacker control store in the recovery volume, we can trick WinRE into using it instead of using the EFI BCD store. Any modification we make to that custom control store would only impact WinRE and will not interfere with the boot procedure at all. So the boot procedure directly uses the store in the EFI volume, but this iteration only occurs in the WinRE OS phase. And this allowed us to achieve the impersonation primitive that we wanted. During the boot phase, the boot manager correctly locates and uses the BCD store in EFI and unlocks the BitLocker encrypted OS. This unlock operation ensures that whenever WinRE boots, it will be able to access the secrets in that volume. But during the OS phase, WinRE actually locates and uses the attacker control store from the recovery volume. And so with this primitive, we can actually redirect the target OS for WinRE, instead of pointing to the OS volume you can see on the top, to point to an attacker control volume like the recovery volume. And that's what we did. So with this primitive in hand, any configuration that WinRE retrieves from the target OS, previously assumed to be out of an attacker's reach, is now fully under the attacker's control. Now, this impersonation primitive was entirely new, not explored before, and as a result, we needed to demonstrate that it could really lead to a BitLocker bypass. We needed to prove our point. And so to assess whether it was exploitable or not, we defined three conditions that if they're met, they would likely cause a full BitLocker bypass. These conditions are, first, a triggerable flow is required, of course. Specifically, a winery flow that can be initiated with the winery UI, schedule operation, or basically executed immediately when winery starts. The second is, which is crucial, is that the flow that we find must not invoke the volume relock functionality, because it would essentially mean that everything we did is not worth it if it goes through the relock functionality, because we will lose access to all of the secrets. And then the third characteristic that we needed is that a winery flow that reads configuration files from the target OS in order to perform sensitive operations. The core idea here is that if we combine such a winery flow with the impersonation primitive, we can gain control over those sensitive operations and potentially access the secrets in the unlocked state. So after exploring different winery behaviors, we found a potential candidate, that is the push button reset functionality, PBR for short. This is basically Windows's built-in system reset mechanism. If you've ever reset a Windows machine, and most of us, of course, did, you've already used PBR. That's the screen that you see. In general, PBR supports multiple different modes. We won't cover everything here. However, one of these modes, known as online PBR, meets all the conditions required for successful exploitation. So first, it can be freely triggered as a schedule operation via the RAGent.xml file. Second, it does not invoke the volume relock functionality, allowing the system to benefit from the unlock state and the BitLocker keys. And then third, it queries configuration data from the target OS to perform sensitive operations, making it controlled through the impersonation primitive. Now, you might wonder what exact configuration that we control can actually allow us to extract data and bypass BitLocker. So we control all the PBR configuration, and among that configuration is actually a file named resetSession.xml, which defines a full set of operations executed by PBR. Notably, it contains the decrypt volume directive, which instructs PBR to decrypt an arbitrary BitLocker encrypted volume. At this point, all the components required for the full BitLocker bypass were in place. The exploit involved modifying a few files on the recovery volume. First, the XML file, our agent XML, updated to include the scheduled operation as online PBR. Second is the BCD store. We essentially created it and modified it, created it on the recovery volume and modified it to point the OS device instead of the real OS to the recovery OS, to the recovery volume. And then we created the PBR configuration and we updated it with the decrypt volume directive. And we instructed the PBR configuration so that whenever PBR executes, it will actually decrypt the OS volume. These are the files you see on the screen. XML with online PBR, BCD pointing to recovery, and then the XML actually instructing PBR to decrypt the target volume. With this setup in place, the next winery boot is routed into online PBR flow. During BCD store lookups, PBR discovers the attacker controlled store and incorrectly identifies the volume as its target volume. And as a result, it loads its configuration from that volume, which instructs PBR to decrypt the BitLocker encrypted volume. Once PBR finishes, BitLocker would be disabled on the target volume, and its secrets become fully accessible. So we essentially turned an unexplored impersonation primitive to a full BitLocker bypass. With that, let's see the last demo of the day. So we are skipping quickly over the repeated steps. We're in WinRE, troubleshoot, command prompt, and now you can see the current state of BitLocker. This time, notice it's now locked. Remember that it is locked. We're going to change drive to the D drive and execute the exploit. So the exploit essentially did the exact same step that we just repeated, created the BCD file, scheduled the PBR operation, created the PBR configuration. And now we're going to reboot into WinRE. And let's see what happens. So we are now, again, during the WinRE boot process. Now, instead of the recovery UI, what you see on the screen is actually the PBR operation being executed. One might think that this resets the computer, but what happens under the hood is that this operation essentially now decrypts the entire OS volume. That's what happens under the hood. Yeah, so, you know, we take some time to decrypt the full volume, so we really make it move really faster. So we're going to wait a few seconds here, letting it decrypt the volume. All right. So now when it's done, we're going to go back to the main OS. And you'll notice, of course, you know, we still don't have the password to the machine, right? We can't just log in. So we're going to restart into Winery again. And now you'll notice something very, very interesting. Select Troubleshoot, Advanced Options, Command Prompt. But now we don't see the screen to insert a BitLocker recovery key, which is very, very interesting. So let's check why this happens. If we have access to the secrets, you'll see that we have full access. And if you wonder why this happens, we're going to check what is the current status of BitLocker. You can see that the protection is off, and the drive is fully decrypted. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, so to wrap things up, let's go over the research results, discuss the main takeaways, and conclude. We found a total of 11 vulnerabilities in Winery that allow bypassing BitLocker. 11 CVs were issued. Most of the findings were pure logical vulnerabilities, some straightforward, others significantly more complex. Due to time constraints, we couldn't cover all of them today. We only covered 4. But we aimed to present a representative mix of both more simpler and more sophisticated issues. The research results actually brings me right into the takeaway of this talk. I'm going to break the tradition of providing 3 takeaways, and I'm going to provide just 1 takeaway, given its importance. So overlooked components can hide high-value security research opportunities. Winery was widely assumed to be a low-value and largely not mainstream component for security from a security perspective. A deeper dive into Winery proved otherwise, revealing a surprisingly rich and productive area for security research. The takeaway is, don't rely on conventional wisdom, dig into overlooked components, and always verify your assumptions. Thank you. Thank you very much. For reference on the screen, you can find 2 QR codes. One is for the detailed blog post about this research, and the other is for BitLocker countermeasures. And with that, I would like to thank you all for being here today. It was really a blast to share with you some of our latest research work here at CCC. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Alan. That was your applause. And I see that we have a lot of questions. And if you now leave the room, please be quiet, very quiet, much more quieter, and take your trash with you. And you can line up at the microphones. They have numbers. And I see your first question on microphone number 1. Please be much quieter when leaving the room. Please be nice. Be excellent, actually. So now, microphone number 1.
Yes. Whoa. Hello. Good evening, Andreas Dietschi. I'm like a lawyer in Switzerland and self-taught nerd, over-average user, but not an expert. And I'm actually am angry right now when I hear this presentation, not at you, of course, but at Microsoft. So I don't know if I understood it correctly, but there is not just 1 or 2 or 3 vulnerabilities, but like a dozen, and all of those are quite easy attack vectors. So one could say that practically BitLocker encryption doesn't exist currently for the last 10 years. And if that's correct, then I mean, law firms, how could they use then like BitLocker on their laptops going out of a law firm? Because when they lose it, it could be cracked. Yeah, and so the question is like, did I understand it correct? Does BitLocker actually protect the disk?
Of course it does.
But no, but I mean, but you can break it quite easily. I probably could do it with my average.
So,
Alan, before you answer, I wanted to inform you that the question answers will not be removed from the recording.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
no worries. I'm just going to say that that's the main reason that we do security research, right? We try to find vulnerabilities, fix them, and then make sure that we are, fixing them and making all of those mechanisms more secure. That's the main reason that we do it. So that's what I'm going to say about this question. Yeah. And.
So anything you can discuss after the talk outside if you like to discuss further.
Yeah, technical questions are would be much appreciated here.
So I have seen that there's also questions from the Signal Angel, from the internet, from the live stream.
Thank you for your talk. The internet wants to know why WinRE was moved to a recovery partition instead of the EFI partition.
To the recovery partition instead of the EFI partition. So the EFI is a different file system than what resides in the recovery. So that's an NTFS volume. EFI would be FAT, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that we wanted to have a partition that is dedicated for recovery, and leave the EFI, which works. That's according to the EFI specification. Many files residing there for a reason, and so there's a separation between what the EFI uses and what we want to use. I believe that was the main reason, but I'm not sure exactly why we decided to go for this route. I can check and we can discuss it offline.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah.
Then microphone number two.
Hi, thanks for your talk and your work. Your work sounds a lot like a whack-a-mole for not asking the user for the BitLocker password when booting the recovery. Is that not an option?
Excuse me, can you repeat?
So from what I understood is that the BitLocker passwords are somehow loaded into the recovery without user input. And is that not an option, just asking the user to unlock the drive from the recovery?
So essentially, the main reason that it's done, and it's done only when you use TPM protector and not other type of protectors. And there is a reason for that, and that is when something happens, you don't want always the user to insert manually stuff into manually insert the BitLocker key, which reduces user experience. If user wants, they can add a protector that would essentially make sure that a TPM pin protector to make sure that password is always added before keys are released. But I do want to emphasize that whenever we're inside WinRE, even if the keys are there, any risky recovery tool that is triggered would make all of the keys to be lost. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you. So then I take a question from the internet again, from the Signal Angel.
Thank you. The internet is also interested in how the vulnerabilities and especially vulnerability 2 were fixed by Microsoft.
So we essentially, for the vulnerabilities were fixed, it's we take a little time to go over all the vulnerabilities. We also added some hardening measures. Not only vulnerabilities, might take some time to talk about it in the future. About vulnerability 2, we essentially added a mechanism that makes sure to verify that only, basically added an allow list for the offline scanning. So you can't execute everything, but only what's registered. That's about it.
Thank you. Then we have so many questions. This talk provokes a lot of questions, which is very understandable. Microphone number 4, please.
Hello. You invoke a drive D in the WinRE. Where is this?
So drive D is the mounted recovery volume. So it's essentially just the recovery volume. That's about it.
But you mentioned you cannot modify it.
So you cannot modify WinRE. That's not the WinRE WIM file, which presents the recovery OS. Winner vim resides in the recovery volume, and that file you can't modify because, well, technically you can modify, but it would just break the trust. Yep. And so there are other files in that volume, or this volume basically you can just add files to it, which is by design, by the way.
I can use it like a normal hard disk.
You can store, if you mean whether you can store files there, you can store files there, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Cool, thank you.
Only a simple question.
Another question from the Signal Angel, please.
Thanks again. How practical is exploitation on a fully updated system using downgrade attacks, for example, compared to the BitPixie vulnerability?
Mm-hmm. So the BitPixie vulnerability, I think discussed here last year, there's actually a downgrade protection for the boot manager. And so that's already implemented. So if you're asking whether this is protected from a downgrade attack, the vulnerabilities that we found were actually in most of them in Winery, and fixes inside Winery platform is shipped into the Winery Wim file, so there is no downgrade risk there, and BitLocker attacker can't modify anything without Wim. But generally speaking, the BitPixie specifically has downgrade protection. We have downgrade protection for the boot manager. That's what I'm trying to say.
Thank you. Then microphone number 5, please.
Yes, thank you for your talk. And
maybe a little bit louder.
Actually, whoa.
That's fine.
Okay. Actually, a lot of questions arose when you were answering the other ones.
Yeah, take it offline.
But I wanted to ask, what does it mean if the drive is unlocked and the protection and so on, because, you know, it felt really reassuring.
What does it mean that a protection is done by the drive is unlocked?
Yes.
That's your question? So when a drive is unlocked, it means
It has any consequences?
Well, the drive would be unlocked only if a risk recovery operation is not triggered. So it would not be unlocked if, you know, for example, you choose CMD.
So the answer is no, or?
Yeah, my answer is that it doesn't have consequences.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I still see so many questions. Yeah, how can people contact you outside of Twitter, outside of X, sorry?
You can find me on LinkedIn. And mm-hmm. Yeah, we can take more questions offline if needed.
Cool, thank you.
Right, and, folks.
Then we can have still the last question with microphone number 1.
Yeah, 2 quick questions. First is, what version of Windows should we pay attention on our clients' computers? I hope they all are fixed, right?
Yeah, they're all fixed.
And the second one, are you able to run WinRE if pre-boot authentication is launched? Or yes?
Can so if you, you have... no. First of all the vulnerabilities are fixed. You can look at the description of the advisories to know which exact versions you need to update to. But about the second question is about pre-boot authentication. So if you used pre-boot authentication, BitLocker key won't be released until you insert the PIN.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool, thank you. Do we still have time for one question?
Oh,
no, sadly not.
Oh, sketch me up afterwards in the hallway in social media. Thank you all.
You can find Alon outside, and thank you so much again for presenting.